The following is the Sunday School lesson for June 27th.
The subject of our lesson this morning is Priest and King in Judah. You see, this is the last Sunday of the quarter. In the first quarter, we studied the gospel story of Christ. Now, in this second quarter, we've studied the division of the kingdom in Palestine, the North and South Kingdom. Now, that series of lessons ends today. But then, for the next 3 months, we take up certain Old Testament books, study of certain of the books of the Old Testament, sort of, not all the books, certain collected books of the Old Testament that we'll summary view of. Finally, in the last quarter of the year, we take the book of Acts, which is always, to me, very interesting. See, we've studied this quarter, these characters, Samuel and Paul and David and Nathan, and Solomon and Rehoboam and Elijah, Ahab, and Jezebel, Elisha, Jehoshaphat, and today Jehoiada and Jehoshaphat. Those are the principal characters we've had during this quarter. Let me say before I refer to the text of the lesson, in this lesson today, I think you can easily get mixed up on the characters. The principal characters are the descendants of Jehoshaphat. Now, the three of them we're talking about, he had one son, Jehoram. And he thought it would be well, you know, to solidify the relations between the northern and southern kingdoms by marrying his son Jehoram to the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel at the lot. So those two were married. They had a son named Ahaziah, who reigned for only 1 year. And his son, we're going to read about today, was Joash, sometimes referred to as Jehoash. So that one son, Jehoshaphat, Jehoram, was the grandfather of this little Joash. Another son of Jehoshaphat was Jehu. We're going to read a good deal about. He was a pretty cruel sort of a man in a way, and yet he did away with the worship of Baal in the northern kingdom. And then Jehoshaphat had a daughter, Jehosheba, who married the priest, Jehoiada. So take those three children of Jehoshaphat. Jehoram, who married Athaliah, Jehu, who went up to the northern kingdom and worked under captain of the guard under Ahab for a while, who finally destroyed the worshippers of Baal in the northern kingdom. And then this daughter of Jehoshaphat, who married the priest and who preserved her little great nephew until he became the king. Going on here to the ninth chapter, 2 Kings. Elisha the prophet called one of the children of the prophet, said unto him, gird up thy loins, take this box of oil in thy hand, and go to Ramoth Gilead. And Jehu, the son of Jehoshaphat, I have anointed king over Israel. You see, this little Jehu, who I say was one of the sons of Jehoshaphat, was there up in the northern kingdom with Ahab. Thou shalt smite the house of Ahab, thy master, for the whole house of Ahab shall perish. And he goes on ahead and says, and the dog shall eat Jezebel and the portion of Jezreel. And Ahaziah, king of Judah, was come down to see Joram up in the northern kingdom. And Ahaziah now is the son of Jehoram and Athaliah. He'd gone up there, and the first thing they did was they put him to death. Joram, the king of king of Israel, and Ahaziah, king of Judah, went out and went against Jehu, and Jehu smote Jehoram between the arm. Ahaziah, the king of Judah, saw this and fled to the way of the guard. And Jehu said, smite him also in the chariot. This is one of the worst carnages in the Old Testament history, the way they killed people here. And Jehu was come down to Jezreel, and Jezebel heard of it. And she painted her face, tired her head, and looked out of a window. And they threw her down. And some of her blood was sprinkled on the walls and on the horses, and they trod under her feet. And the dogs ate the flesh of Jezebel. This is, as I say, a very gruesome story all through these chapters. And Ahab had 70 sons in Samaria, and they were all put to death. They took the king's sons and slew 70 persons, put their heads in baskets, and sent them to Jezreel. So the Lord had done that which he spake to his servant Elijah. And Jehu slew all the remainder of the house of Ahab. And he came to Samaria, and he slew all the remainder unto Ahab in Samaria, till he had destroyed it. Jehu said, proclaim a solemn assembly for Baal, and they proclaimed it. And then they came and got all the priests of Baal in there, and then they went out, and they killed all the priests of Baal, and destroyed their places of sacrifice. And in those days the Lord began to cut Israel short, and Hazael, from up here at Assyria, came down, and he began to trouble them too. And that brings us on down to the 11th chapter. And Athaliah, the mother of Ahaziah, saw that her son was dead. She rose and destroyed all the seed royal. In other words, this woman said, well, my son's dead. I'm going to destroy all the descendants so I can take over the throne myself. So she set out to kill all of her children and grandchildren. But Jehoshaphat, the daughter of King Joram, sister of Ahaziah, took Joash, the son of Ahaziah, and stole him from among the king's sons, which were slain, and hid him, even him and his nurse, in the bedchamber from Athaliah, so that he was not slain. Athaliah's own little grandson, a baby. 6 years she kept him there, and Athaliah did reign over the land. That is to say, while her little son was hid away for these 6 years, Athaliah, the first woman to come to the throne in the southern kingdom, reigned over that kingdom, the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel. And the 7th year, Jehoiada, as the priest, sent and fetched the rulers over hundreds with the captains and the guard, and brought them to him into the house of the Lord, and made a covenant with them, and took an oath of them in the house of the Lord, and showed them the king's son. Maybe I ought to shorten this part I'm going to read. Showed them the king's son, and the captains over the hundreds did according to all things that Jehoiada the priest commanded. And they took every man his men that were to come in on the Sabbath, and them that should go out on the Sabbath came to Jehoiada the priest. And to the captains over hundreds did the priests give King David's spears and shields that were in the temple of the Lord. King David's own weapons had been kept there, you see. You see, what he did was he waited till it was time for the change in the watch, as we might say. And one set of guards went off, and another came on. And he said, we'll keep those who are ready to go off. We'll just keep those and take the newest too, so we'll have plenty of guards. We'll have both watches, as we might say. And the guards stood every man with his weapons in his hand round about the king, from the right corner of the temple to the left corner of the temple, along by the altar in the temple. And he brought forth the king's son, and put the crown upon him, and gave him the testimony. And they made him king, and anointed him. And they clapped their hands and said, God save the king. I'm sure the English translators changed the wording of that a little bit, but they said, long live the king. I've no doubt what they said. And Jehoiada made a covenant between the Lord and the king and the people, that they should be the Lord's people, between the king also and the people. And all the people of the land went into the house of Baal and break it down, his altars and images. Break they in pieces, stir, and slew Mathan, the priest of Baal, before the altar. And the priests anointed officers over the house of the Lord. And he took the rulers over hundreds, and the captains, and the guards, and all the people of the land, and they brought down the king from the house of the Lord, and came by the way of the gate of the guard to the king's house. And he sat on the throne of the king 7 years old was Jehoash when he began to reign. And Jehoash did that which was right in the sight of the Lord all the days wherein Jehoiada the priest instructed him. And of course, when he was brought in and crowned, and Athaliah heard the noise, she rushed over there and she came in and she shouted, "Treason, treason." So pretty soon made way with her and put her to death. And then this little 7-year-old king, Joash, continued to rule, and he obeyed the instructions of the priest. And he did pretty well so long as the priest lasted. And then finally, apparently, he outlived the priest. And the time came when the rulers of the Hazael, the king of Syria, went down, and this young king, who had not apparently learned so well to think for himself, and without the instruction of the priest, he took the money out of the temple, paid it as tribute, just as many of his ancestors had paid it as tribute to foreign governments. So that's sort of the story of little Joash. Now this Jehu had gone up there to the northern kingdom and cleaned out all the worshippers of Baal. Jehu ruled 28 years in the northern kingdom. I don't know how much he knew about this. It's sort of all in the family, you know, so to speak. Here was the three descendants of Jehoshaphat are getting brought into the forefront of all this story. And Athaliah, when she got in, you wonder a little bit why the people ever tolerated Athaliah for those 6 or 7 years that she ruled. One of the answers given was that she herself, of course, was the grandson of the king of Tyre, and she managed to get commerce established between Tyre and the export of grain and wool and fish between Judah and Tyre. So maybe that had something to do with it. But here was little Joy, preserved all those 7 years until he got old enough so they could bring him forth and say, here, they hit him in the temple. Athaliah must not have gone around the temple very much, because she didn't find that's a good place to hide. Good place to hide money. You know, at a later period in the Jewish history, when the scriptures were lost, the book of the law was lost, and they searched for it. Could have been, where did they find it? Found in the temple. Just like, you know, Christ was 12 years old and he got lost from his parents. And they searched for him every place. And they came and they found him in the temple. Well, maybe somebody said, well, a good place to hide money is put the Bible. Nobody ever finds it there. And so it was with Athaliah. She didn't find her little grandson because he was hid in the temple. The story is so much like the hiding of Moses. When he was arrested, when Herod, and they took Christ down into Egypt to preserve him against that tyrant. By the way, I see in the morning paper some Englishman said that Herod the Great did the right thing. They ought to get rid of some. Getting too many people in the world. Well, I'm just one of these men that likes to get his name in the paper. I have an idea. Now, this little Joash was king from about 837 B.C. to 800 B.C. You see, it's getting down to the time of the prophets now. Pretty close to the time when the great prophets, Isaiah, some of the great prophets, begin to write their prophecy. Of course, not just the time of the prophets. Of course, we'd already had Elijah and Elisha, but I mean the writing prophets. A time when Rome had hardly begun, when Greece was in its very early stages. And then here's this little boy in the temple, just like Samuel, in a way, was in the temple, although Samuel wasn't hid in the temple. He was turned over to the temple by his mother. Here's this Athaliah, the grandmother of this little son. And who was it that hid him away? Why, it was her sister-in-law. I guess you'd call her sister-in-law. I said, no, not sister-in-law. Athaliah had married one son of Jehoshaphat. Yes, it was. And it's the daughter of Jehoshaphat. wife of the priest who'd hit him away.
Well?
Jezebel was a very wicked woman of the north. But Jezebel never did quite what Athaliah. Jezebel didn't ever go out to kill her own kin, her own descendants. And all this trouble had come, apparently from the great mistake that Jehoshaphat had made when he permitted his son to marry the daughter of Athaliah. Like Samson's ruin. Samson's trouble came from the fact that he married a Philistine woman, you know. Old Ezekiel says, the soul that sinneth, it shall die. And over in 2 Corinthians, do not be mismated with unbelievers. Well, the priest, old Joy, he kept his powder pretty dry for 7 years. I wonder if he didn't worry a whole lot. If Athaliah had ever found out that he was keeping her own grandson away from her so that she couldn't put him to death, I just wonder what kind of a death she would mete it out to the high priest Jehoiada. Well, this Athaliah has become very famous in literature. Racine, you know, wrote a great poem on Athaliah, and Handel wrote one of his oratorios about Athaliah. She was so mean that she became famous for her meanness. Well, this little boy, after he grew up, as I say, he paid tribute to Hazael when he came down there, paid tribute, and he was criticized for it. But there are many places in the history of this southern kingdom where they paid tribute to Shishak of Egypt, and to Damascus, and to Tiglath-Pileser, Hezekiah to Sennacherib. They did it lots of times in our country. At the very beginning, started paying tribute to pirates. Remember our country, and England, and a number of the countries, paid tribute to the barber of pirates. And very early, in the first wars we ever engaged in, we called it a war, we said we're not going to pay tribute to those folks anymore. We went over and cleaned up them over there in the Mediterranean Sea, and then people, all nations quit paying tribute to the pirates. Think of it. What is the influence of God on history? Does God have an influence on history? Here through the priest, you see, who influenced the king. God certainly acts through devoted religious leaders. We read the story of Isaiah and the other great prophets who did influence the life of the nation. They certainly did. And in our country, we have all the evidence. Every state and colonial constitution makes reference to God. The sermon this morning, every coin of our land has on it "In God We Trust." The Declaration of Independence, all men were created, endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and so on. But the government has been very, good governments have been very important in the spread of the Christian religion. The Apostle Paul could never have gone about in all his missionary journeys except for the protection that Rome afforded him, which earlier governments would not have done. And Shakespeare and Raleigh owed much to Elizabeth. Governments that perhaps were not perfect governments, nevertheless furnished some protection. And so I wonder, we wonder sometimes, why, if all that's true, why Russia is permitted to go along and apparently do so well? Well, I think one of the answers to our for asking that question is, let's remember, one lifetime is pretty short. And maybe it takes more than a lifetime. But the great conquerors in history have never won out permanently. Gibbon, in his great book on the decline and fall of the Roman Empire, gives some of the reasons for the decline and fall. Some of them are rather embarrassing to us today, I think. He said, the rapid increase of divorce that undermined the home life of the nation. Second, the astronomical rise in taxes for the purpose of giving free bread and free circuses to the people. And third, the vast expenditure for armaments. And fourth, the intensified interest in sports and gladiatorial combat. And five, the fading of interest in religion, thus destroying the very foundation of Rome's national life. say some of those things to us may be a little bit embarrassing, but they're nevertheless the truth. George Washington gave some advice on the subject, and he said this: of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. In vain would that man claim the tribute of patriotism who should labor to subvert those pillars of human happiness, those finest, those firmest props of the duties of men and citizens. Well, certainly, God has had an influence on history throughout. You cannot read history, study history, the rise and fall of nations without coming to that conclusion. But I think it isn't by murder or by destroying idols that our influence has been felt. You cannot go out and destroy idols and thereby destroy idolatrous worship. You cannot, by going out and merely murdering people, extend the influence of Christianity. It has to come through the influence of good people that we conquer the world. Henry Ward Beecher said one time that one of the greatest influences on his life was a Negro boy who was a servant on his father's farm named Charles Smith. He said Charles Smith, a Negro boy who would lie down in the bed to read the New Testament, and he would chuckle and he seemed to get so much good out of it, said, "I don't think Charles Smith ever knew that he influenced me or ever tried to influence me. And I didn't know he was influencing me myself at the time. But I think he had when I saw how he could read the New Testament and get so much out of it, he was one of the greatest influences on my life." And so it is, for many times, without knowing it, we can be of a great influence. The Red Jacket, who was the orator of the Iroquois, said to some of the missionaries who went up to the Iroquois early in the history of our country, and he said, go and teach your message to the white people. We will be spectators. We'll know the tree by the kind of blossoms it has. You go and preach to the white people, and we'll observe and see what your teaching does. You see, in a sense, every man commands the great hope. We cannot measure the influence. You never know what your influence is. Here, Jehoiada and Jehoshaphat worked through a little bait. They became king of the land. We can't all work make some little baby the king of the land, but we can work to educate and to preserve the rights of little children. And some of them may turn out to be far greater than we would ever imagine. Home, you know, I don't know, but this is sort of a contest between the old and the young in this lesson. Here was Athaliah. She wanted to be the queen herself. She wanted to rule. And she wanted to destroy her young descendants in order to preserve the right for herself. Herod the Great did the same thing. You know, destroyed some of his own sons. We're not quite there. The young babies haven't any chance to defend themselves. And we go up there in Congress. Old people can vote and babies can't, so they don't have any hesitance about piling on some more on the national debt for the benefit of the present generation. Let the future generations pay it. We're not looking after the children, you know, very much. And I think we take pretty good care of the old people. We're providing for pensions and all kinds of relief for old people. But what about those little babies coming along and going to have to pay all this debt that we're creating? What about them? We need to give a little thought to them. I'm utterly defenseless, you know. I saw something in the morning paper. I guess it was a cartoon of a little baby that did start out to defend himself, and it was funny only because it was so unrealistic. Here was a little baby that was picketing his own hole, and he had a sign that said, "Unfair." Going back and forth, and the milkman and the iceman and so on wouldn't go into the house and serve them because it would cross the picket line. Well, that sounds all very good, but of course a little child would never be able to do that. You never know about the influence. In the British Museum, there's an old stone there, 5,000 or more years old. It has all the footprints of a bird. And to keep it there is illustrating the fact that never got to be careful about what you write, what you do. What you do may last on down through the ages. And then it says this little Joash obeyed the priest all the days that the priest lived. He obeyed it. Somebody gave the illustration of a German switch tender on the railroad. And a train was coming, he had to turn the switch. And his own 5-year-old boy was out on the track. The question was whether he would go out and try to rescue the boy, or, in the alternative, try to stay there and turn the switch. He couldn't do both. He yelled at his little child, said, "William, lie down flat." And William obeyed him, as this little king did. And the train passed over him, and everything was all right. So it all turned out for the best because the child did obey. And then I wonder, as we study this lesson, what failure some great leaders have been. These that we've read about in this quarter's lesson. What great failures and how they could have been so successful. If Napoleon or Stalin had had the soul of George Washington, what they could have accomplished. I thought during the last war, when Stalin was still living, he had the greatest opportunity almost of any man in history. Stalin could have said, "I'm going to work for the peace of the world." He didn't have but a few years to live anyhow. He could have come out and been a George Washington. He never would have been forgotten as one of the great men of history. He already won a war with Germany that people didn't think he could win. If he used it to a good purpose instead of a bad, what a great man Stalin would have been. And so you might say the same of all these kings we've been reading about. In this quote, sometimes you have to fool people, like they had to fool people about this little living child. You know, the story got out. It's one of the members of the Russian royal family still living, something called Anastasia. That was rumored a long time. And somebody said, "Well, maybe Hitler has been taken off to Argentina. Maybe Hitler is still alive." And we get to wondering about that because of things like this that have happened. And one time, when Sweden was such a great world power, and the king died, and there was no succession, and the nobles gathered, and finally the prime minister came in, and he said, "We do have a successor to the king." And the curtain was pulled back, and here came the queen with a little baby. A little baby had been born. Now, the people have been fooled about that sometimes. You know, we sing a lullaby to the children. Rock-a-bye baby in the treetop. When the wind blows, the cradle will rock. But when the bough breaks, the cradle will fall, and down will come baby bopper. I wonder why we sing that. So, well, the reason is that was written not as a lullaby at all. But the king had no successor. And they're going to fool the people, and at least they thought. They'd smuggled a little baby into the palace. And they couldn't say so. And somebody wrote that little thing. When the bough breaks, the cradle will fall, and down will come the baby bough, cradle and all. Well, over in England, when Edward VII was about to die, Dr. Wilson Carlyle, who founded the church army over in England, was invited to come around and visit Edward VII on his deathbed. And he went in, and Edward VII said to him, "Well, Carlyle, how are your tracks?" And he said, "Well, what do you mean by that?" And he said, "Well, you know, tramps and kings need the same faith." We, this just brings back, this whole lesson brings back to me that those familiar lines of law, truth forever on the scaffold, wrong forever on the throne. Yet that scaffold sways the future, and behind the dim unknown stands God, but in the shadow, keeping watch above his own. And then that line of George Eliot about the influence that we maybe unconsciously leave on for other people. Every soul that touches yours, be it the slightest contact, get therefrom some good. Every little grace, one kindly thought, one aspiration yet unfulfilled, one bit of courage from the darkening sky, one gleam of faith to brave the thickening ills of life, one glimpse of brighter sky to make this life worthwhile.